This is Steve McGargle. We're at Liston's in Worthington. Today's date is June 15th, 2010. And I'm interested in your experience growing up around here playing golf.
I started 1963. I would have been six. And we just started goofing around up there. You know, we weren't allowed to play. Would have been Bruce Packer, myself, Jerry Bartlett, my brother Mac, Gary Pease, the Hallowell boys, who lived at Denworth Farm, I think was their house at the time. There was a bunch of guys that were a little older than us that were caddying, and of course we were just riding our bikes up there and checking the place out.
So it was a good place to hang out. You're in town.
Yeah, we used to get shooed because we were too small when we were 6 and 7 years old. They didn't let us hang around. We weren't old enough to caddy, so we were just pests. We used to go out, actually, the older boys would send us out looking for golf balls, and then we would come back with the golf balls, and then they would trade sodas for all the, of course, we were probably getting screwed, you know, financially, but they would trade us sodas for, they would buy us a soda, and we'd give them all the golf balls we found. Then they, in turn, would turn around and sell them to, oh my gosh, who would have been a pro then? Probably Jack Toski, I think. Jack Toski in 63, maybe 64. George Horton from Pittsfield, he was pro there for a couple of years. My father ran the pro shop for a couple of years. He fell off the ladder, hurt his back, and so they didn't have anybody up there, so he took the job. I was about 9, so that would have been 66 or 67, but I think before him was Jack Toski. Then there was Bub Tiley, George Horton. Of course, Pete Packard was there a long time, and I'm sure I'm missing some. But again, kids weren't allowed to play. We could only play on Mondays as caddies, and every once in a while, one of the elder members would ask us, like Helen McCann, would ask us to carry her bag, and then she would be sneaky, and we'd get down on the second green, and she'd let us play the third hole when no one could see us, and we'd carry her bag, and she was one of the first members that let me play when we weren't supposed to. Right? We thought that was a big thrill, you know.
How old did you have to be a caddy?
Well, they used to let us caddy for the women pretty young. I think I was 8 when I started caddying for her. Mm-hmm. And she would play every Wednesday. It was ladies' day, and the men weren't allowed on the course. The women weren't allowed on the course until on the weekends, till after 3. I don't know what year that ended, but I know it ended late. I think as the 60s went along, they still weren't allowed on Saturdays and Sundays until after 3. We always thought that was funny.
Yeah, we'll have to look into that.
Yeah,
a little bit, see
check
what
on that. I know for a fact that as I caddied, when I was old enough to caddy for the men, women were not allowed. It might have been 1 o'clock, but women were not allowed on the golf course on the weekend days. There was no guests. It was members only. You could bring a guest. I could invite you as a member, but you couldn't just walk in like we do now and pay greens fees like people do now. It was very, very private, very private. And of course, the rooms upstairs were rented, and you know, the kitchen was really just a snack bar, a place to get a drink and a hot dog. There was no real food. I think the members used to make their events. They would all do like potluck. But when we started caddying, we would carry 2 bags, and it would be $8, and they'd give you each a dollar tip. It was $4 a bag, they'd give you a dollar tip.
One caddy per pair?
One caddy would take 2 bags, yeah. And, you know, the bags then were small. Soon after that, the bigger bags started showing, the big leather bags, and that precluded most of us from taking 2. So we needed more caddies, and at that time there was quite a group of us: Scott Smith, myself, Ben Brown, and Joey Shea, Richard Humphrey, Bruce Packard. Let's see, I know I'm forgetting somebody. Well, before that, right, was Daryl Smith and my brother, I think, did a lot of the caddying, and we kind of inherited it from them. Mac Ronski, before he died. But there wasn't a lot of people taking caddies, so there was only 5 or 6 of us. But every Saturday and Sunday we would caddy, and then Monday we'd get to play, and then every once in a while you'd get lucky and somebody would ask you to play. We were pretty limited, though.
Did you caddy just 1 round a day?
Sometimes 2, depending on... I always got to caddy for a fellow by the name of Len Smith, who lived in Williamstown. His brother Ray Smith lived in Westfield, and they met here and played every weekend. So I always had a job. Scott Smith always had a job. Ben Brown always... We caddy for the same guys every weekend. Mm-hmm. Once in a while, you'd get another bag in the afternoon, but not too often. It was just caddy, ride our bikes up, caddy, 8 o'clock noon, go home. And
were you able to give any pointers, or did they just want you to drag their bags around?
No, pretty much was don't lose a golf ball. We would take turns walking out. One caddy would walk out in front of them on two, on three, on seven and eight, and be the spotter. And the other caddy would leave the bag, and you'd walk double till you caught up with yourself. But we were never asked much. Strictly carry the bag and don't lose a golf ball was what I remember about it. You know.
When did you start actually playing?
Those years we were allowed to play on Mondays, and we would play 54 holes. Scott Smith and I and Bruce, we would go start at 8 in the morning and go all day long.
Oh, my.
Yeah, it was... Well, there's nothing really else to do. Once in a while, we'd go swimming, but that was it. We'd play constantly. And then once in a while, like Mrs. McCann was great sometimes about asking, would you like to hit a ball? Would you like to play? But we were pretty much not allowed until we got older. And then we started playing more as we got to be... They started letting us play more during the week, not on the weekends, but during the week. It would have been about 1970 and 71, I think. I think Pete Packard was buying that. Pete Packard, a guy by the name of Wib Delano from Huntington, Bill Klein, and this Ray Smith and Len Smith, they saw there was a lot of us juniors had some potential, and so the club kind of backed off about the non-playing thing. And I think I was probably 13 or 14. We started playing every day, all day.
Yeah, were you getting pretty good?
Yeah, a lot of us did at the same time. Yeah, yeah. Bruce, myself, Mackie Ronski was a real good golfer until he quit playing. Scott Smith, Ben, Paul Cena. Paul didn't caddy because he was working all the time on the Cena farm. But Paul, Timmy, Joey Shea, Tim Tunstall. The Ryan boys, Charlie and Chris, I think were held up here against their will. You'd have to talk to them. I just remember Mr. Ryan like dropping them off one day, and they joined us, and all they did was they were upset about getting pulled out of Little League in Springfield.
Yeah.
You know, it really pissed them off.
Yeah. So a lot of the kids were coming up just for the summer, or were they the only ones?
The Shays lived here year-round. Tunstalls were here for the summer. The Whitcombs, T. Whitcomb, who's not with us anymore, he was a good golfer. It was a group of us, and we just would go play and have a soda and go play and have a soda and go play and have a soda.
Did you ever have tournaments?
They had junior tournaments. I know I have a picture I should give you that shows how many kids were involved. Okay. Yeah, John Tolliver, Bruce Packard, and there's a great picture that somebody took of all old black and white with Wib Delano handing out junior trophies to all of us. We had to be 13 or that age, 14.
Did you have a mentor or anything?
Well, there was a lot of good members. The guys we caddied for were all good players. Frank Kosmarski, a guy from Westfield, was an excellent player. My Uncle George, Pete Packard and Bam Packard, Babe Smith. George Horton, who took over the pro shop, was excellent. He used to take us as caddies to other tournaments. That's the first time I ever saw another golf course. He would take us to these Allied events in Berkshire County. Mm-hmm. And he was quite a golfer and quite a character, as I found out later.
Right.
Yeah. Big, loud. You know, 6'3", about 250 pounds, hit it a mile. He was quite a guy. A real mentor, I don't know, probably just watching all those guys. The best player at that time was Pete's brother, Bam. He either won or lost always right at the final gun. We kind of just came at it, all of us, watching and caddying and playing.
Any of these guys come out and try to give you pointers, or did they not really want you to be so competitive?
We weren't really wanted.
Uh-huh.
No, we weren't. There was a group of the club that I think, not just Worthington, but all clubs during that time, caddies were stuck out back, come when called type of thing. Now I talk to friends that caddied at Pittsfield Country Club during the same year, and they were treated the same way.
So there must have been a real social kind of party scene when you were off, cast off into the background.
Well, no, our thing was we would take off on our bikes and go swimming. Albert's Pond, I don't know if how long you remember that. Okay, that's where we went often, and if Doc Baldwin, where Pete and Sue Fisk live now, if they were around, we were not allowed to swim there without supervision. Doc Baldwin didn't want us just riding our bikes down. Albert's Pond, anybody could swim there. And we also would ride to the swimming hole in River Road, Dr. Stone's, the Stone Pool over there. A lot of people don't know about that place. We kept it pretty quiet, but it's a fantastic place to swim. I still take friends there.
That's a lot of riding on your bicycles.
Well, that's the only way we got around.
Must have been pretty fit.
Yeah, we all were, actually. Most of us all went on to play soccer. I think that whole group, maybe with the exception of Scott Smith, went on and played soccer. That was kind of our training, riding our bikes around the hill.
Then you guys were at it almost all the time, on the weekends and during the summer.
Right. We were there pretty much 7 days a week.
Yeah. Into the evening as well? Or
often, yeah. Tuesday night, you know, we weren't allowed to play. Wednesday night, we weren't allowed to play, but sometimes someone would ask us. Thursday night was always the men's night. Friday night, we didn't play a lot, but we would hang around on the old practice green or chipping and looking for golf balls. That was always a good hobby at night, because that property across the street was posted when Louis Hyde lived there.
Cross Ridge.
Where Shaw's property is now and where O'Connor's house is. That was always posted with a fence. So at dusk, we'd crawl around on our hands and knees and hope we didn't get caught. I don't ever remember anybody getting caught, but I heard stories that we got in trouble once. I don't remember that. I don't know if I wasn't there or what, but yeah, that was a big thing. And turn around, sell the golf balls for money.
Well, good. You got to find a way to make some cash one way or another.
Yeah, nobody had any jobs. Actually, I don't think any of us worked other than caddying.
So was it really special to have the golf club in this neighborhood?
I never realized how lucky we were until when I started traveling and I realized, oh my God, not everybody does this. And when I first got out of college, I realized how many people don't play golf. This whole town played golf growing up. We all spent all our time up there.
Where'd you get all your equipment?
A lot of it was hand-me-downs. I don't specifically remember getting a new set of clubs until I was probably 14 or 15. It was all Dad's or Bevo's or Uncle George's or Pete Packard's or somebody. I remember Ken Paul one time, Helen McCann's nephew, he was pretty well off. He gave a bunch of us some clubs that he had come across. Paul Tompkins gave us a bunch of clubs. But my first new set, I think I was probably 14 or 15 years old.
How did you come about?
I'd saved up my money, actually,
really?
From caddying. Yeah, and then I'm not sure if I paid. I don't think I paid for the whole thing. I think my father ponied up some money, and I ended up picking out a new set of clubs from Tom Toski, who's still kicking. I think that was the first set I ever got that was brand spanking new.
Yeah, did it feel terrific?
Oh, it was great. Yeah, it was fantastic. I remember the first time we all traveled as a group, we were probably 16, and they started a Berkshire County Junior Series, and everybody was shocked that Worthington had so many kids that could play. We traveled well. We went and we did very well, and there was probably 10 of us. There was too many. They would only allow 8 from each course, and we used to have to decide who was going to go. And that was the first time we saw what the rest of the world was like, these nice private courses like Pittsfield and Wyantonuck and Tekonek. Well, it didn't. It was, Worthington was, at that time, a field with holes in the ground.
So it was a little rougher to play. Did that give you an advantage on these other courses at all?
No, I think the fact that we played all the time gave us an advantage. It didn't hurt us, but I don't think it helped us that much. The fact that we played all the time. I remember going to Great Barrington, and we had, like, the winner in the 12-year-old group, in the 14-year-old group, in the 15-year-old group, in the six. So Worthington had like 6 of the, whatever there was, 5 groups. We won all 5 groups.
Wow.
The head pro was like, he basically was accusing us of cheating. So we were all kind of like, whoa. We weren't cheaters. We just had good golf.
Yeah. So I'm just curious, did your new golf clubs improve your game?
Oh, you know what? I don't even remember. I remember getting them, and I remember worrying about scratching them, but I don't remember. I never got really good until I quit playing baseball. Bruce Packard and I actually played on a high school baseball team, and we had a good baseball team. And he was a starting shortstop. I pitched, caught, played in the outfield, and we had decided that we wanted to play golf and play baseball. The baseball coach wouldn't allow it, so quit baseball and went to golf, and then we went 2 years at Gateway without losing a match.
Wow. So it sounds like the community and the schools had pretty good golf programs for you to get involved with.
Right. They started the junior program in Berkshire County when we were 16 or so, and it was a great program. You paid $1 and got hot dog, soda, and played all these great golf courses. And it's too bad. The same stuff isn't going on now. There's not the participation, but we would have 100 kids would show up at a court. There's 10 courses or 11 in the Allied Golf Association, so each course would send 8 or 9 kids.
After you played some of these more manicured golf courses, How did it feel coming back here?
We were all surprised. We didn't realize what the difference was from here to there.
Did it make this golf course less enjoyable or more difficult?
No, it didn't bother us. No, this place was always fun. But the conditions were totally different. The mowing and having 18 holes instead of 9, big clubhouses, a lot of the clubs have swimming pools.
They improved it all over the years as you were playing, right?
It never really started changing until Pete Bacon. Okay. Pete Bacon came there in 80, until 81. But I know I'm pretty close because I know he's at least a year or two younger than me. And he was the first superintendent. He built the new putting green and brought the course up and created collars on the golf course, fringes in the putting areas. He planted all those trees down by number 2. He built the bunkers. Pete did a lot in the time that he was there. And that was the biggest change. Worthington didn't change much probably for 40 or 50 years. They mowed it. They put cups in the greens. And the golf course never changed from the time I started hanging around there. The changes were very minor. They built the bunker on number 2, which Ralph Moran paid for. I remember helping with that. They built a bunker on number 9.
Are those sand?
Yeah, sand traps. But the layout, I don't think they've actually touched anything other than minor cosmetic changes to tees and things like that.
Do they change the holes in the greens every year?
The holes change every day.
Oh, they do?
Almost. Okay. Yeah, because the cups would be worn if they didn't.
So
the ball keeps hitting the edge and it's dirt, or people touch it when they reach in. So Eddie probably changes them every other day. Most courses change them every day.
So did you ever have tournaments up here?
They didn't have a lot. And as kids, we weren't allowed. Like, I wasn't allowed to play in the club championship. They changed the rule for me because when I was 16, I wanted to play in the club championship, and they wouldn't let me. I mean, I was good enough. And I got ticked, and I said, well, you know, the club bylaws didn't mention age. It just said you had to be a member in good standing. And so the very next year, they changed it to allow me, as 17 when I was 18. I'd have to look. But they did. So as far as other tournaments, that we weren't allowed as juniors. They had some junior tournaments, but not a lot. The junior club championship and maybe one junior day.
So when you did your community tour around the Berkshires, for example, you never came into Worthington?
Worthington hosted one.
Oh, it did?
Yes, yeah. But there wasn't a lot of stuff. If you didn't play in those, there wasn't a lot of things for you to play in.
So did you work? You were a caddy. Did you do any other kind of work at the golf course? Or?
Not too often. We would help Babe Smith once in a while. I remember helping dig some bunkers. But yeah, no, never on the payroll.
What do you love about the Worthington Golf Course? What's your favorite thing about it?
That it's not crowded. It's an easy place to go and play and nobody gets in your way.
Familiarity and camaraderie, any of that?
Yeah, the club's gone through cycles, and I was away for quite a few years. Played in Pittsfield, and it's had its moments. Not a good moment right now for the club. I think the best thing is it's not a hard place to go play. You walk up, there's nobody, no tee times needed, no. It's always in pretty good shape. The conditions are
take good care.
Yeah, the conditions are good. You know, they're blessed with good turf, and Eddie does a great job.
What's the best hole?
Probably the 7th hole. That's very hard, long par 5. Through the trees, down. It's long and lush, and it's always nice to be down on the sun setting and the long green shadows. But they're all fun.
Every one of them, huh?
Yep.
In its own way. What about that wild thing that you look through so you can see?
Oh, the periscope? I don't use that.
Is that common on a course?
No, but other courses have them. It took Willie Brown 5 or 6 tries to get that right before you could see through it. But when he got it, a lot of people use it. I still walk out to the top of the hill and watch the shots so you can see where they go. Hard to pick them up through that little telescope. You can see people, but you can't really see the ball as it's hit. So I usually walk over and stand by the 4th green and watch people hit and then walk back. Yeah, I don't know how many periscopes I've ever seen. I've seen a couple, but not too many.
How's it changed over the years?
It hasn't changed much. Most of the changes were in the 80s when Pete Bacon did a lot of the work there.
Since then,
it really hasn't changed.
What about competition?
No, it's been up and down. Some years we've had a lot of it. Some years, not as much. But I was gone during most of the 90s. Didn't play there at all. Played in Pittsfield most of the time. So there's always a few good players there, no matter what year. It's always had some real good golfers.
Is people pretty laid back about it, or do people get an attitude, or is it a little of everything?
Well, I think, you know, golf brings out the best and the worst in people. So I think there's a lot of people that it bothers, and I think that's just human nature. You know, they don't like to lose.
So you kind of learn who's got that kind of a feel about it, or does it change?
Well, you know, you get one thing about golf is you usually get to pick who you're playing with. It's not until you get in the tournaments, and then you can't. But there's always going to be people that are annoying to play golf with, no matter.
What does it mean to be annoying? How's it? Well,
some people have no golf etiquette.
Can you give me a couple of examples?
Well, yeah, walking and talking and moving while you're hitting and not being ready to play when it's their turn and not fixing their ball marks. You know, it's a lot of that is from people learning golf and didn't caddy. We learned all that stuff as caddies. Some people don't know the rules. Some people can't count. I mean, there's...
Do people usually keep accurate score?
I think it's all kinds. Tournament players do. People that don't play sometimes have a hard time figuring out what they had. You're self-policing, so it's an easy... If you want to cheat, people can cheat like hell. Almost every year we catch somebody cheating.
In a tournament or other?
No, just in playing. You know, there's stories.
But is it serious or is it playful? Do people laugh about it or do they get upset?
Well, it depends. I think each circumstance is its own case, but it defeats the purpose to cheat. That's not what it's about. But people do it all the time. You hear stories. I hear stories constantly from guys that say they had a 5 when they had a 6. So if you do that every hole, you shaved 18 strokes off your score.
So what about the way that equipment has evolved?
Yeah, the technology is crazy. It's making courses obsolete. You read about that all the time.
That's
the PGA Tour, the ball goes too far. You know, that driver you just saw me ticking with is there's some courses that they can't have PGA events on anymore because the distance isn't long enough to challenge these guys. But the equipment is, it's all about sales. That's why they keep coming out with new stuff. A good golfer, it doesn't help much. It helps the average golfer more. And that's why you see all these people changing. And that's why you see you go in Dick's and you see all those clubs laying there and all those golf balls. And
yes, like the dimples on the balls have changed.
Yeah, they haven't changed much to do with the golf ball lately other than the material. The design of the dimples have remained pretty much the same. They've experimented with hexagons and different sizes. The aerodynamics of the golf ball hasn't changed much. The products they make it with is what's changed. The rubber they use and coatings and a lot of that's proprietary. You can't even find out what it is. It's all patented. But the clubs have made the biggest change. The advent of graphite and titanium and the lightweight weight. You just felt that. That driver compared to the driver that I used in college is 60 grams lighter than the driver I used 30 years ago.
When I think of swing, if I relax and allow the golf club to do a nice sweep, is there sort of a balance?
Well, yeah, it's like driving a race car. Well, it's physics, you know. The speed of the ball weighs the same for everybody. So the speed of the club head and then the severity of the impact is what makes it go. So a bigger person, in theory, will hit it. Bigger, stronger person will hit it further.
You still don't know what...
Kind of hit it straight. Yeah, right. So it's a combination of the impact has got to be square to make the golf ball. That's a law of physics because an unsquare impact imparts side spin, so it's going to drift right or left. If you know you're going to get side spin, it's like throwing a frisbee in the wind. If you know how it curves, you can aim left and it still ends up... The problem is when you're aiming straight and it curves, most professional players hit a ball with intentional curve. They don't hit the ball straight. They hit it curved right to left or left to right. They don't stand and hit a ball straight. And the reason for that is they can eliminate half the issue. So if your ball always curves to the right, you're never going to see the left side of the golf course. If your ball always curves to the left, you're never going to see the right side of the golf course. If you hook it too far to the left, your next shot is another hook out and around. So that's what you want to do. By curving the ball, you eliminate half the golf course. People hit the ball dead straight. On a good day, it doesn't matter. On their bad days, they don't know if it's going right or left, so now it brings in the whole golf course. If you stand and watch these guys like at the US Open, you'll see them. They don't hit the ball straight. They curve every shot.
And that gives them a little more definition to the direction they want to go.
Well, it's easier to repeat. And also, like the big thing is it'll eliminate half the problems. If you always curve every shot right to left, you will very seldom be anywhere near the right side. If you always curve every shot the other way, you'll very seldom be on the left side. So you can get this established pattern and eliminate part of the trouble. Right.
So any wild characters at the golf course? over the years. Well,
Jack Toski was probably the wildest character I ever saw. He was crazy. He was a great golfer. But yeah, you could learn a lot. The people we hung around with and caddied for didn't cheat. They shook hands. They always were very respectful of the other golfers. They didn't take a lot of time. That's one of the big problems now with people that haven't grown up caddying. They don't realize by not being ready to play, they waste tons of time. If you just picked up 2 minutes every hole, think about that. That's 40 minutes in a round of golf. That's a lot of time. One of the biggest problems is all these people watch these guys on TV. Well, they're never going to be as good as these guys on television. Don't be doing all that stuff. Step up and hit it. You're still going to shoot your same score, but it's going to happen faster. It's going to make the guy behind you happier, you know, and it's going to make the people you're playing with happier. You're still going to shoot that 90 or whatever your ability is, but you're going to do it much quicker. It's the hardest thing to get through people's heads.
So being able to play in Worthington doing your caddying gave you a real strong sense of that.
Yeah, because we saw all these guys. They didn't screw around. Especially some of them, like Babe Smith, played incredibly fast. George Bartlett. They would tee it up and whack it.
And they weren't going to wait around for you.
The whole idea was to play fast and get it over with. And not make the people behind you wait. That now is one of the biggest problems. It's, you know, what used to take 4 hours now takes five sometimes.
Yeah.
You got all these people lining up shots and two practice swings, and it's ridiculous.
Yeah.
It's a ball.
What's the strangest thing you ever saw somebody pull out of a golf bag?
In person or on TV?
Anywhere.
Lee Trevino pulled a snake out of his bag, a rubber snake on Jack Nicklaus. I remember seeing that on the news. I was pretty young. I was probably 71, and it was in the U.S. Open. It turns out it was staged. It wasn't. Nicklaus knew something. He didn't know what. Strangest thing I've ever seen in person was probably Ben Albert had us put rocks in Ron Schuster's bag from Williamsburg. And every time we caddied for Ben, he would have us put one or two rocks in the bottom of his bag. Well, Ron Schuster bought a new bag in the Worthington Pro Shop 1 year. Went to clean it out, and out comes like 20 little stones. That wasn't my idea. I did do it. That was Ben Albert's idea. And of course, Ron Schuster said a lot of words you can't repeat. He called Ben every name. Of course, Ben just laughed and laughed and laughed. And Ron Schuster, the reason he did it to Ron Schuster was too cheap to take us as a caddy. He had the money. He was a wealthy guy, but he carried his own bag. And Ben was, that was Ben's little way of needling him, take one of the caddies. That's probably the strangest thing.
Are there little rituals, unwritten rules or anything?
I was fortunate enough to play against a lot of real high competition. One of my teammates always marked his ball with a coin that was the year of his birth. He was born the same year as me, 1957. He had a quarter that he had with.
So a lot of the rituals are driven by superstition.
Yes, yeah, superstition is some guys always want to use a golf ball number one. Some guys always had to wear white shoes. I'm not superstitious.
So no special little rules?
We used to play, because there was no driving range, we used to play on the first hole, if it was early in the morning and everybody was tight and stiff, that you could take a free second shot.
What about mulligans?
That's a mulligan.
Oh,
yeah,
it is?
Yeah, a mulligan would be another chance without counting your first chance. But we didn't do that too long because what we found out was not everybody was doing it, so it was kind of cheating. We did that for a couple of years. I don't remember any real superstitions.
Anybody hit any smoking golf balls in your game?
No, we didn't do much of the practical jokes. I remember one time, though, Scott Smith grabbed the ball on the second hole and ran it and put it in a cup. So the guy thought he had a hole in one. He got yelled at.
Were you around for the back-to-back hole in one?
No, I was actually playing somewhere, and I remember picking up the paper. I'd have to look. I think I was playing in Nashville, Tennessee, in the U.S. Boys Juniors, and picking up the paper and seeing Worthington.
Oh, so all the way down there?
I cut it out and brought it to George Torrey because he was my neighbor.
Uh-huh.
I'd have to look at where I was, but I know I was out of state somewhere playing in something important and seeing it in the newspaper. All the sports sections have like a little miscellaneous section. And I remember sitting in the clubhouse reading and saying, holy shit, that's us. So I was pretty proud of Worthington.
Yeah. How many other things could a kid from Worthington do that would have taken them all over the country?
Yeah, no, I was pretty lucky. I got to go. Well, I mean, I played twice in the national juniors. I played in the collegiate nationals four times. Got to see Galveston, Texas, Nashville.
What was that like? Here you are, you've grown up in this area, and then going to all these different places.
One of the members, Bill Klein, took me and bought a golf club. I didn't own much for golf clothes. We played in shorts all the time. Golf shirts you had to wear up there. And I had a couple pairs of Bermuda shorts that I probably inherited from my brother. And that's what I wore all the time. I had no real golf clothes. You know, slacks. And, you know, I wore dungarees. So Bill Klein was president at the time when I went to Nashville and took me down. My mother was all embarrassed because he didn't tell her. And I came home with all these expensive clothes, and she was all embarrassed. And she called him up and said, "What are you doing?" She was embarrassed, you know, that someone paid for clothes for her kid. I thought it was pretty cool. "Hey, got some veggies for me?"
"Yeah, my dad."
"Oh, yeah. We'll buy them off you." "Yeah, tell me, just talk to Diane and..."
"All we got for now is lettuce, but it's nice lettuce."
"Cool.
Two different kinds."
"Oh, awesome. Yeah, take it back, give it to Diane, and I'll pay it for it. How much you want for it?"
$2 a bag."
"Sure. Great. She'll give it to you." "Yeah, thanks, Trip. I'll buy up everything you got. Just let me know when you're ready. I mean, sometimes we don't use a lot, but lettuce we go through a lot. So if you want to get rid of it, just let me know."
"Nice.
Cool. Yeah, you're welcome." Local produce.
Yeah.
Diane, you're buying some lettuce in case you don't know it.
The idea of traveling, clothing.
So that I did that with probably would have never happened.
Yeah. You know,
I was intimidated. The clothing thing was cool. It made me feel good because when I got there, everybody was dressed the same. The place we were at Nashville, the practice tee was very limited, and so you drew slots. And so I drew slots. I stood next to Payne Stewart, which was really, and he and I became friends. And of course, these kids all came from money, and they all got these clothes on. I was so, at first I wasn't real happy about I was going to wear my Bermudas and my golf shirt. When I got down there, everybody's got double mitts on, leather shoes, blonde hair. You know, I mean, I was wicked happy. Now I fit in. When he first did it, I'm thinking, well, I don't need this.
Yeah. Well, you want to blend a little
bit. Actually, Ralph Marine had a hand in that, too. He went with us. Yeah. And so that was neat. And getting to those places, I mean, Galveston, Texas was really cool.
Now, were you alone from Worthington when you went down?
I was alone in Nashville.
No other kids from Worthington?
Well, no, only 100. But I don't know what this is the whole country. And it's the U.S. Open for boys. And the first year I qualified, it was in Bridgeport, Connecticut, and that sucked.
Why?
All I got to go was to Bridgeport. The year before Bridgeport, it was in Seattle, Washington.
So you were excited about travel?
Yeah, it was cool. But Nashville, I went on my own. The club paid for my plane ticket. A couple of the members gave me some spending money. I had a little money at the time because I was working for Brad Fisk at the store. So I had saved a little money. And
so you got on a plane?
That would have been 75. I got on a plane. It would have been 1975. And I went down there and they put you up with members. The USJ has a rule, if you come on a company, you can't stay in a hotel room. So one of the members met me at the airport. This guy's, I saved everything he wrote to me. His name is Jim Gustav. He was a big shot with Jack Daniels. Beautiful house, you know. And so they drove me to the golf course every morning and waited for me, and his wife cooked. And so it was not stressful, that part. The stressful part was the golf, being out with all these guys in the room. Really, really good.
And were you able to show them that whatever the case may be, you're up?
Yeah, in Bridgeport, I went and qualified, and I beat a kid from Michigan, and then I lost to Joey Sindelar, who's now on the PGA Tour, in the second round. And the next year in Tennessee, I qualified on site, and I lost my first match to some kid named Vince Vines from Texas. So I made it to the top 32 one year and the top 64 the next year. It was really cool. And of course, the papers back here had me call them, and there was all sorts of stuff in the newspaper. My mother saved all of it. There's a scrapbook somewhere with all that.
You should dig it up.
It's somewhere in the end. I'll dig it out for you. And then after that, I got college stuff. You know, we travel a lot in college. We were really good at good guys. And
where'd you go to college?
Rollins College in Orlando, Florida.
And a big golf school? Or?
Well, not big, no, but we were Division II, but we had a very good team. Won the national championship, Division II, in 1977. And then in 78, we were fifth or something. 79, I don't think we even qualified. But it was fun, and being in Florida was great. You know, it was.
How did that make you feel when you came back into town? Did your friends, were they excited for you?
Yeah, I really thought it was. I came back to Gateway and played in a basketball alumni game, and you know, everybody was, because I was the only guy with a tan. That was neat. People were really cool, you know. And, that, and the Gazette was always popping my name in the paper if I did something. Springfield Union, you know. I popped up once in a while, stuff like that. But people were very nice. Actually, that summer when I think, I don't know if it was that summer or the next summer when Rowena Humphrey was Miss Massachusetts, so I wasn't the biggest fish in the pond. She was by far.
You know, beauty.
Yeah, right.
Golf.
She was by far. We were all chasing her. I think it was that. It might have been that same year. I think it was kind of cool. It's like you could say, I know her. It was cool, and she was great. She wasn't a snot at all. You know, she was really, a lot of fun together. They were all Humphreys. We spent a lot of time in that house.
So no girls playing on the golf course. No girls in the caddy.
Linda Albert, but she stopped as she got older. Yeah, no, there was no Frank Lasky's daughter, but that was quite a bit after me. Wayne Fisk's daughter, Stephanie, but no, not our time. The only girl was Linda Albert. She was tough and very good golfer.
I guess you have to have this sort of supporting community for that sort of thing. And if they weren't allowed
girls
to
play. Girls didn't play, though. Yeah. I mean, right. They didn't do it. Excuse me. There was no girls soccer at that time. There was no, I mean, girls basketball, they played.
Half court.
Yeah, right. 3-on-3, right?
Yeah.
3 couldn't cross half court. I remember those days. And then there was, the only real sport girls had was field hockey. At Gateway, when I first went to Gateway, there was no girls soccer. The girls didn't run track, cross country. Basketball was kind of a joke, and they played field hockey. There was no girls softball either, if I remember.
Yeah, not until the mid-70s.
Right after I graduated, right, yeah.
Do you know of any notables that played the course over in Worthington?
George Schultz, Gordie Howe, a guy by the name of Warren Giles from Virginia, whose son was Vinnie Giles, was a great amateur. But Joe Kirkwood was a famous trick shot artist. The Toskies, of course. This place didn't really draw them. I brought a few real good golfers here, and they didn't like it. The trickeration.
What was it like when any of these people would play? I mean, I imagine there was a big scene when.
Well, Schultz, when Gaddafi threatened to assassinate all of Reagan's cabinet, they had that street blocked off, and there was Secret Service agents everywhere. And, but when he was just Treasury under Nixon, it was just a small presence.
Yeah. You know?
But when that year, whatever year that was, I'm reading his memoirs now. It's fantastic. Triumph and Tragedy, and it's like this thick. It's all about his dealings with Sadat and all that shit that went down in the race. It's amazing, this stuff. It's shake your head. How close we were to blowing each other up.
Yeah, we've come to the brink on a number of
occasions. 4 or 5 times. He's already. I'm not halfway through it. Yeah, it's amazing. But it wasn't as bad as I've heard people say, except for that particular year or two. The state police blocked up both ends of Ridge Road. You couldn't get by unless you were on a list. And, you know, they had people walking the golf course with submachine guns in front of them, behind them. They had a little radio station set up on the porch.
Did they clear the course of every other player?
No, I played with him one time, and I played behind him one time. I don't think they cleared it, but I don't think these guys couldn't have got up there.
Yeah,
you know?
Right. Not just anybody.
Right. And he turned out to be a great friend. We went to California. He got us on courses out there. He sent me this beautiful letter. Yeah, he turned out to be quite a guy.
Those are great things to hold on to.
Oh, I can't believe I saved the letters. I have them. I found them by accident one day, and I ended up, Mom was playing scrapbook, and she tucked them in. I've got them all on a scrapbook, all his correspondence. He was wonderful to us when we went to California. We went to Pebble Beach to see the U.S. Open in 1992. They got us on so many private golf courses and picked up the tab, and, oh, you're Mr. Schultz's guest? Well, go in the locker room, you're us. You know, every place we went. Oh, my God, he didn't have to do that either. You know what I mean? I was looking for him. Actually, what I wanted was play golf with him, but the day we got there, he left for Hawaii for his vacation. But so without him there, just him making phone calls, he got us up and down the coast of California. Every course is so much fun.
What? And that sounds like he might have really gone out of his way to take care of it.
Well, it certainly wasn't one phone call. You know, I mean, he made a phone call, then he called me and said, can you play on such and such a day in San Francisco? Then he had to call back to the golf course. Can you play on such and such a day? Like, you got us on the Fort Ord courses. And can you play on such and such a day down in Santa Cruz? And so there was numerous phone calls. And He was like just amazing. When he heard we were going, he told me, "Well, call me." So I did. I said, "What's out?" He said, and then he hooked me.
If you come across that material at some point, and
actually, I just was looking at it. I have it all. Every letter he wrote was 4 or 5 letters, and picked.
We could scan it. And
yeah, you guys can have it. You should have it. Yeah. Yeah.
I think that covers all the questions that I had. Is there anything that you think I missed?
The golf course did a lot for the town. Kept a lot of us out of trouble, I'm sure, and still is. Now there's a whole other generation of kids.
Right. Yeah, well, you see the young kids up there. It's kind of a nice mix of people.
I forgot. I got to give my Danny a ride home. You all set?
Yeah. I'm
okay,
all
great. I'll think of something, but I'll get those letters and that book.
Okay.
And
that'd be great.
You want to see that scrapbook with all that stuff my mother saved?
Sure.
Yeah, I'll dig that out. I don't know where that. I know where the other book, because I was. He wrote a letter to Berkshire Hills, and I gave them the letter. They should have it. I don't have any. But the others are all there, so dig them out and get them to you.
Sounds great.
Great.
All right, you take it. Thanks so much for taking the time.